Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, and you never know, there might be a mister or two, and happy Tuesday. Hope everyone's having a great week so far, and I hope you have a great week to follow. Hi, Pam. Hey, Naomi. How are you both?
Hello. Hello.
Well, you guys are getting good at that. That's 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Yes. So anyway, how's everybody making out today? How's the weather there? Today it was 68 here. First warm day we've had. Like warm day.
Nice.
How about you, Pam?
How about you, Naomi? How was your weather?
Oh, a nice sunny day out today, but I was I had an appointment all afternoon, so I didn't really get to go out in the weather, but yeah, it was a lovely day. I had to go into the city today, and you know, it's like a 45-minute drive and nice driving all the way, and like, you know, I little above, well, you know, zero is freezing for us. I don't know how much it is in like in from Celsius to Fahrenheit there, because we work in Celsius here in Canada.
Yeah.
We're just above the freezing point there. So like a couple of degrees above freezing point, which is pretty good for this time of year, you know. So pretty nice.
Very cool. How about you, Pam?
It was nice. It didn't get as high as 68, but it did get to 64,
right.
And it was a nice 64. It was like the sun was just,
yes.
The sky was a beautiful blue, the sun was shining, there was just a slight breeze, so you didn't get overheated. Went for a walk with my teenager, which was really nice. We spent some time talking on the way walking to the store, but then on the way home, they got kind of bored and wanted to walk ahead of me, so I said, well, as long as you carry all the groceries, you know. So they got home before me, which was absolutely fine. I said, just make sure to let me in, which I'm sure they would have anyways, because I'm the one that cooks the food that we carry.
There you go.
But yeah, it was a really good day and really great that my kid actually asked me if I wanted to go for a walk with them. I mean, that's, just a good day.
Absolutely. Very cool.
And yeah. How about you, Dean? How was your day?
My day was all right. You know, I'm tired as always. It's just the way of my life. But I got a few things done and got the laundry done. Oh, wait, don't tell anybody because they'll have to strip down again. And I got the dishes all done, and you know, things are looking kind of good. I cooked dinner for my grandson and I. Everybody else was out and about today. So that was nice because it was just the two of us, and we hung out in a little bit and, you know, just stuff like that. Just normal stuff. Not that much of my life is normal, but that portion of it today was. There's always a little craziness in my world, you know, no matter which direction I turn, there's some poking his head through. But it's okay. I don't mind. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I usually say this too shall pass. And, I believe that too. You know, I mean, what is it? If he leads us to it, he'll get us through it. That's the way it goes. And there's a lot of truth in that statement.
Absolutely.
I let things get to me, but then, you know, I also know where to draw the line. So that's always good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's peachy. That is
it
peachy.
Is. It is.
So listen, tell me all about the contest for tonight.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I decided to, I came across the artwork of Justyna Kopania, and who's a Polish artist. And I really liked her artwork. And she even says it to herself. It's reminiscent of, you know, like, certain types of classic art, and yet it doesn't really fit. It's reminiscent of Impressionism and Expressionism, and yet it varies, and even I think Cubism, but doesn't really fit into one certain category. She does oil painting most of the time on a large scale. She has always been fascinated by the creative process. When she was a child, she loved music, opera, ballet, painting. And she said that she didn't choose painting. Painting chose her,
nice.
Which I thought was a cool quote. And the really fascinating thing about her artwork, like what really drew me to it, and in fact, one of the things I had said to Naomi when she commented on the side of the contest was, yeah, I really love the textures.
Mm-hmm.
And what she does is she doesn't limit herself to painting with brushes. She will use anything from a piece of cardboard or wood, a kitchen fork, tools for sculpting or bricklaying, and she'll even oftentimes paint with her hands. in order to make a specific impressions and textures within her artwork. She loves capturing the emotion of an event in her her paintings go anywhere from like the ocean to a ballet on stage. In fact, she paints boats and the water, lakes, oceans, rivers quite a bit. I had to limit myself. I put up a bunch of her boat and ship paintings, and I was like, well, I don't need quite that much because, you know, people can always go to her artwork and grab a different one if they want.
Right.
But she likes to paint open space. She likes the how it feels to look out upon the ocean, which never seems to end, and just be aware of your own humanity within that moment as you're looking at something so grand. So, you know, obviously those who wrote for the contest have seen her artwork, but if anybody's listening to the show and they haven't seen her artwork, then I highly recommend that you check out Justina Copagna. Absolutely amazing stuff. Her use of colors, her use of textures, and the fact that, you know, a lot of times, and I have nothing against digital art per se, especially if people put thought into it and actually use it as an art, not just, you know, AI, but actual digital art. But to have a young artist that actually still takes the time to paint with oil paint, I think is just something that should be noticed and supported. So, and I'm definitely excited because we had a lot of quality and quantity, a lot of great responses to her artwork and the poetry.
Very nice.
Absolutely. And here I was saying, Pam looked at the artwork, saw all these paintings of the ocean, and she thought of Naomi.
They might have. You never know now.
Naomi, yes.
She said, Naomi, what a watch to write about.
Oh, my gracious.
That was
so beautiful, that artwork. Oh, my gracious. You know, I'd have all those paintings all around the house. My gracious, was so beautiful. Probably out of reach of my range of price too, but
especially if they're doing larger scale paintings, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think there's always some way to support an artist, even if it's just, you know, word of mouth.
Yeah, that's it. And it's awesome, too, that, you know, you said, Pam, a young artist that, you know, really creates something from her hands and doesn't go by our, you know, artificial intelligence. And, you know, that's so much pure talent there. Oh, my gracious.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's for sure. Yeah, and Aaron Panther says a couple of the pieces she painted reminded him of Kandinsky, which I can definitely agree with. There is that vibe, especially within, I think, the use of color and bold lines. So, you know, he's always got some great observations. And I see Aaron and I see Quicken on the board. So hello to both of them. Good to see them.
Hello, fellas.
All right, well, I guess we can go ahead and get started. All right. So, of course, I like to start Tuesday out with a classic poem. And this is Sea Longing by Sarah Teasdale. And Naomi, since you're our lover of the sea and all things to do with the sea, why don't you have anything to read for us?
I read it earlier. What an honor. It's such a beautiful poem. Sea Longing. 1,000 miles beyond the sun-steeped wall, somewhere the waves creep cool along the sand. The ebbing tide forsakes the listless land with the old murmur long and musical. the windy waves mount up and curve and fall, and round the rocks the foam blows up like snow. Though I am inland far, I hear and know, for I was born the sea's eternal thrall. I would that I were there, and over me the cold insistence of the tide would roll, quenching this burning thing men call the soul. Then with the ebbing I could drift and be less than the smallest shell along the shoal, less than the seagulls calling to the sea. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Naomi. Of course, I think it's pretty obvious that why I chose this poem, at least in part, because I will tell you that when you Google classic poems that have the word sea in them, there is actually quite a bit of them. In fact, I think poets write about the sea or the ocean and just about as much as they write about love. But I have to say, I did choose Sarah Teasdale because she is one of my favorites. Great classic poetry, wonderful rhyme. And what I liked about this is I just felt it fit so well with the artwork and how you could see within the artist a real appreciation and love for the sea. And I felt that same thing within this poem. And I thought, especially as it got near the end, which says, "For I was born the sea's eternal thrall, I would that I were there, and over me the cold insistence of the tide would roll, quenching this burning thing men call the soul." And then, "Less than the smallest shell along the shoal, less than the seagull calling to the sea." You can tell that this is written by a person where the sea really spoke to them, and they really understood how small they were, both physically and spiritually, when standing next to it. So, just as always, an amazing write and very well done. Of course, as we all know, yes, none of the classic poets are looking down at us and really eager to hear our thoughts, but, you know,
I know they're waiting to hear what I have to say. Always.
Yeah, exactly. So, Jean, what did you think of this classic poem?
Oh, I don't know. No, I liked the poem. I thought it was a beautiful poem. Lots of detail and great imagery all throughout. I should just read what the AI had to say about it all. But that's longer than the poem.
Well, there you go.
It's much longer than the poem, so I'm not going to. But there is wonderful imagery all throughout this, and I love the thoughts. The ebbing tide forsakes the listless land with an old murmur long and musical. The windy waves mount up and curve and fall, and round the rocks the foam blows up like snow. It's just wonderful references throughout the whole poem. And, you know, it's just a great piece for tonight, I think, from what I've seen of the prompts. So nice work, nice pick, nice choice. Nice read, Naomi. Thank you, Sarah. I liked your work.
Great comment, Jean. And Naomi, you did do a wonderful read of that. And your thoughts?
Yeah. Oh, my gracious. You know, and when I read this earlier, I was just like, oh, I want to go back home. I want to go back home, you know. And it's such a feeling, you know. And those last lines, you know, that you read, Pam, you know, where you're less than the smallest shell along the shoal, less than the seagulls calling to the sea. You know, yeah, you feel that when you look out into the vastness and all you see is just water and water and water, and you the smell and everything, you know, it's just, sometimes I just break down and I cry right there on the seashore, you know. Right in the car when I'm sitting, you know, and you hear the waves, and I don't know, it's just the such a powerful moment and such, mm-hmm. And another thing I want to, when I gather up my emotions here, you know, it's so nice that it's there, you know, the windy waves mount up and curve and fall. It's like, you know, the movement of in the artwork itself that you chose, you know, there's all this, like this movement going along in the paintings, you know, that like you call them like layers, you know, but they're like, you know what I mean, eh? It's like that goes right with that line, mounts up and curves and falls and around and blows up. And so, yeah, it really goes along, I thought, with the artwork really, really well. So bravo. Great choice for tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. And I have to agree, wonderful comment. All right. And our next poem we have up, now we're delving into our all poetry poets, is Calming Sea by Betty Page. And Jean, would you go ahead, please, and give that a read for us?
I knew she was coming here because I was over there. Yes, I sure will. Okay. Wow. How many times do I have to hit the button, I guess? Calming Sea by Betty Page. Restless waves crashing, deep dark sapphire blue sea glistens in moonlight. Shining beams, dreamy shades of blue, midst twinkling bright stars. Illuminating gently, glowing radiant highlights reflections. Shining beams, dreamy shades of blue, midst twinkling bright stars. Restless waves crashing, deep dark sapphire blue sea glistens in moonlight. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Jean, and what a beautiful write by Betty. I love the imagery in this, and you can tell that Betty is another one who has an appreciation for the sea. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Okay, off mute, Naomi. Yeah, this was absolutely stunning imagery throughout. My gracious, you know, the shining beams, the dreamy shades of blue, the twinkling bright stars, the restless waves crashing, deep dark sapphire blue sea, the glistening, the moonlight there. You know, I think she took the prompt and she just dived in and she just, you know, poured it all out, you know, not in painting, but in words onto the page. So, you know, just such a brilliant write by Betty Page. So beautiful.
It really is. And I like that, you know, poured it all out to create art with her words. So very true. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks, son. I thought it was a beautifully penned piece by Betty. I love the imagery as well, and I really enjoyed it. You know, restless waves crashing, deep, dark, sapphire blue sea glistens in moonlight. God, can't we all get an image of that, you know? And I don't know what her prompt was. It could have been that dark image with the light bouncing off of the water. But shining beams, dreamy shades of blue, mist twinkling bright lights, illuminating, gently glowing, radiant, highlights, reflections. I can kind of, I looked at the prompts that you had on the topic board, Pam, and I think there's one there that has like a midnight blue background with lights coming down on the water. And I'm not sure if that's the one she chose to write to, but that's what I saw when I read this piece. So beautiful job, Betty, and thanks for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Great. Wonderful comment. And I think you're right. I can't be sure because she didn't attach it to her poem or put in the AN.
Right.
But I did think of that exact same painting when I read her words. You know, even from the very beginning of the poem, restless waves crashing, deep, dark, sapphire blue sea glistens in moonlight. I really like her use of the word mist, M-I-D-S-T. Twinkling bright stars. I feel like that adds a really classic feel to the poem. Wonderful 575 lines, beautiful imagery. And I like how she doesn't just write about the ocean and the sea. She writes about the way the moonlight interacts with it. So it becomes all about the interaction between the moonlight and the sea. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, nice.
I wonder if we're going to get a Twisted Mister to join us tonight.
I don't know.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I don't see one yet.
I know, they're all like in the corner trembling or something.
Calling all cars. Be on the lookout for a Twisted Mister.
Sail our way.
Handcuff them and bring them in.
There's a change. Look, I get in enough trouble on All Poetry. I don't need to be handcuffing anybody. Thanks.
All right. I'll do all the handcuffing then.
Rumor has it that you do. Just saying.
I'll hold your whip.
Oh. Damn it, her assistant.
Oh, too funny. Our next poem is A Raindrop Falls by SSM. A raindrop falls, sometimes lost in sand, sometimes a hope on parched lips, sometimes the last required one for bursting of new life from seed. My actions and my words transferred on ether may serve any of these purposes. But even if they are lost in sand, wouldn't I want to leave my mark with the colors left behind of who I truly was? Wouldn't I want to be true to myself today in every action of mine, no matter how mundane, where it will have some impact on the unfrozen course of the unmarked time terrain? End poem. And SSM was inspired by Prompt 16, which I feel like might have been one of the chip ones, but I can't keep track of what I put up. It was actually a painting of Paris, France. And I remember that because of the title, though I didn't put the title of the poem. It was called something like The Streets of Paris. Really beautiful there. I don't know if Paris is beautiful, but the painting is beautiful. And wonderful, right? And Jean, beautiful.
And ask me how I knew you were coming here. Because I went looking for the prompt. Anyway, I thought it was a very well-written poem. A Raindrop Falls. Yeah, that title alone could go any direction you want it to. But sometimes lost in sand, sometimes a hope on parched lips, sometimes the last required one for bursting of new life from seed. My actions and my words transferred on ether may serve any of these purposes. It seems as if that raindrop is quite a metaphor here, and I like the way that she used it. Great lines, great imagery, and well-expressed thoughts. So nice job, SSM. Thanks for sharing with us.
Absolutely. And I have to agree that raindrop really made for a great metaphor. So very cool. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, I really like this, you know, a lot, you know, a brilliant twist on the prompt. And, you know, when you think of it, we're all, you know, like a single raindrop, you know, just falling, you know, on earth, on others, on our surroundings, leaving our imprint, you know, And we're all longing to be heard and remembered for what we truly are and leave our imprint, leave our, like she says, our distinct color on the world. And, you know, I really like the part when she says, but even if they are lost in sand, wouldn't I want to leave my mark with the colors left behind of who I truly was. And I think that's, you know, I think that artists, especially artists, we want to leave something behind, at least, you know, that's what I want, you know, just leave some little thing behind, mark on the world, I think, you know. So greatly, you know, awesome, right? And I really, really liked it a lot.
Absolutely, me too. Yeah, I like that she starts out with the single line, a raindrop falls, you know, and then goes into the raindrop and its many purposes and how it can just get lost in the sand or parched lips, a hope on parched lips. You know, all these lines are just beautiful. And then her transition is very nicely done with the "my actions and my words transferred on ether may serve any of these purposes," and that is so true. I mean, you know, that idea, that this poem kind of reminds me of that idea of, you know, always be kind with your words because you never know what somebody is going through. And you know, that, and it also, as Naomi says, that idea that we all want to know that there's a part of ourselves that gets left behind when we leave this earth. You know, that we want to know that, you know, we made an impression, whether it was through our art, our poetry, or our acts of kindness. We want to know that there's an impression that we've left behind on other people's souls. So wonderful, right, and very well done. All right. Well, that is a nice comment. A lovely tone to the poem, despite a sense of seeming as insignificant as a single drop of rain. Great comment there, Erin. Very cool. All right. And up next, we have "A Siren for the Smiling Tomb" by Shalini Krish. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, this is "A Siren for the Smiling Tomb." When colors are heavy, details and descriptions swallow the globe. Borders and boundaries have handcuffed the frilled prairies, whose happy talks are buried in the clouds, imprisoned by corporate servers. Alone, the melancholy moon has become a large, bitter pomegranate seed, expression of ripened fire, setting nails of trees ablaze, burning every shade to ashes. The truth to lie, the lie to truth. With just black and white, the beauty surrenders to doze. Still awake is an intangible aerial dream atop the minarets of sky, waiting for a staircase, growing through piano lobes, a touch, a connection, a tethering, can no more distort the dissonant burdens of loss. The road is stretching further and far, a siren for the smiling tomb, and the zebras dance behind barricades wearing their favorite harrowed rainbow coat.
Wonderful read and write there, Naomi. Wonderful read, Naomi. My apologies. Wonderful, right, Shalini. I always enjoy and appreciate Shalini Krish's writing. It's just got such, you know, and this poem is no exception. Powerful lines, beautiful and brilliant imagery and metaphors. And there's definitely an underlining darkness that speaks on death and destruction and the violence that is not only within mankind, but within nature. I like the imagery of the bitter pomegranate seed, but I also like that it's a representation of the goddess of spring, of Persephone, who ate the pomegranate seed when she went down to Hades, and the idea that she represents both death and hope and renewal. I also really like where it says, the beauty surrenders to those still awake is an intangible aerial dream atop the minaret of sky waiting for a staircase growing through piano lobes. Wonderful, almost like spiritual imagery here with the mention of the staircase, such as the staircase that Jacob climbed in his dream when wrestling with an angel, and then the reference to Joseph's rainbow coat, and you know, and I don't know if she meant it that or they meant it that way, but I have to say that's what it made me think of. It made me think of the story of Joseph and the coat of many colors, but it also, you know, with the mention of the zebras and then the rainbow coat, made me think of the idea of in a world that is torn apart and filled with so much burning violence, to be able to stand out as an individual with your rainbow coat can offer up that poignancy of hope. So amazing write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I think that this was a great piece. I had to laugh when I heard handcuffs in the first stanza, though, because I thought, there they go again, them two. I did. But I like this. When colors are heavy, details and descriptions swallow the globe. Borders and boundaries have handcuffed the frilled prairies. They've brought it in. They have it just tied up. And, you know, I get that image there is really good. Whose happy talks are buried in the clouds, imprisoned by corporate servers. Isn't that a truth? You know, I mean, so much now is just tied up in so many different places, and there's no, it takes a lot of the spontaneity or the whimsical parts of life and turns it into something a little different. You know, happy talks are buried in the clouds, imprisoned by corporate servers. That's very true. How many times, you know, when you think about it, you know, in the old days, back when I was young and dinosaurs roamed the earth, you know, you would talk to somebody. You would go up to them and talk to them, or you pick up the phone and you would call them. They'd have their phone with them. If they didn't answer, they would call you back, maybe, you know, if they had an answering machine, which that's even a little more modern. You know, if not, you would call them again later if you really wanted to speak to them. Now, you know, everybody talks to everybody, and it's all out in the cloud, and it's like, yeah, it's just, things are so different. You know, borders and boundaries are handcuffed to frilled plains or prairies. The prairies used to be wide open spaces, and now they're all fenced in one respect or another. I don't mean that literally, and I don't think that Shalina did either. You know, and that melancholy moon has become a large, bitter pomegranate seed, expression of ripened fire, setting nails of trees ablaze. Yep. So, no, I think it's great imagery all the way through, and I think it was really well expressed. So, nice job, Shalina, and thanks for sharing with us.
Mm-hmm. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And, yeah, you are right. We are definitely living in changing times. And not all those changes are for the best of our society and for humanity in a whole. So, you know, good comment there. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think I, you know, in that comment I sent her, I was listening to you guys and, wow, you know, I think I got this all wrong, but, you know, what struck me first was, you know, the alone. You know, how she put that word alone. And then she puts the melancholy moon. But just above it, you know, you have all these, you know, all these colors that are heavy on the swallowing the globe and, you know, everything. And all the corporate servers. So I saw it as, you know, the moon as a metaphor of, you know, just a bitter loneliness that someone can experience. And although that you're surrounded by so many others as the colors, you know, as everything, as all those corporate servers and anything. But that's just a tiny piece of the whole poem, you know, and I see the hope. The hope to at the end, you know, to become more, you know, like in touch, you know, like she says, a touch, a connection, a tethering, you know, to be to our road is stretching far, further and far, you know, a siren for the smiling tombs. So, you know, there's hope also. But there's also sadness in this poem and darkness. So, and yeah, and there's a lot in this poem. Very, very brilliant, brilliant, right?
Absolutely. It is a very layered poem. And that's the great thing about poetry is to have it be open to interpretation and to hear different people's thoughts on it. And I like what you had to say, Naomi, about the moon representing the loneliness we feel and the idea that there's that thought of hope, that we need to tether ourselves and to connect with other people. So very cool there. And Aaron Cancer says in LNC, I read into this piece a society being governed to the extent of iron-fisted suppression, and the citizens can only dream of escaping like a tide leaving shore. And Quicken says, the natural world versus modern life has very colorful imagery. I feel like it mourns the loss of authentic connection and expression. Wonderful thoughts shared there, gentlemen. Thank you very much. And up next, we have Sepia Sales by Yorkie Ball. And Jean, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Sepia Sales by Yorkie Ball. Beveled glass forms a backdrop to streaked skies. Tea-stained sails, pinions, darned to needled masts. Gulls gather over holes filled full of gaped mouths, dull gill flaps folded light tightly. Harbor winds ripple pristine reflections, glazing over imperfections. Pearl essence floats gleaming underwater in half shells, bumping, scraping, battered, low-slung loaded keels. A flotilla of small vessels, nets flung over wet gunwales, tired bronzed bodies draped over creaking, still tillers. Silently watching seabirds swoop, screeching onto discarded fish heads. Static sails meander above olive-tinted crest swells, slapping warped wooded sides, barely disturbing their flat wake, rising, dipping, waiting to offload their glittered catch. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. And what wonderful imagery. Yorkie Buff is another one that really paints with their words. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, my gracious. You know, this is the kind of poem like Jill often says, you know, to just copy the whole thing and paste it back to them. You know, what amazing imagery, my gracious. And, you know, my family were all fishermen. My brother still is. Of course, they didn't fish it. They don't fish in sailboats. But, you know, I could just see, you know, the tired bronze bodies draped over creaking, you know, as they were working. And, you know, those seabirds, you know, the seagulls swooping in, you know, on discarded fish heads. You know, that picture there, that's so, you know, so authentic. You know, the seagulls are there, and they're just, you know, they're coming in for those fish heads, you know, and they're just, you know, swooping in, and, you know, everything that she described, the water and everything, oh, my gracious, this took me back to, you know, childhood and, you know, even other days, you know, when I'm out fishing with my brother, and, yeah, wow, amazing, amazing, right?
Absolutely, yeah, and I think anybody who has been near the ocean or grew up around it would definitely relate to this. A wonderful comment there. And Jean, your thoughts?
I knew she was coming here. Hi, Pam. I thought this was very well penned piece. Great imagery. And I said, you know, she repainted the prompt from top to bottom. And she filled in any voids that the artist left. You know, the open spaces in the poetry have been filled in by fish heads and just the imagery and the thoughts and nets and, you know, all of it. And I think that it was done very well. So thank you so much, Yorkie Buff, for sharing with us. Great piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I like that she filled in any spaces that the artist left. Yeah, and I like when people write about what's not in the picture. So, mm-hmm. You know, and you know, her adding in like all these details really shows that she paid attention to the artwork, but she also added in the sound, like the bumping, scraping, that is no slung, loaded keel. I like the use of the word flotilla. A flotilla of small vessels, nets slung over wet gunnels, tired bronze bodies draped over creaking steel pillars, silently watching seabirds swoop. And really a nice, gentle use of alliteration, enough to make the poem and the imagery interesting, but not overly done. I really like how she brings the ship to life within her poem. So wonderful write and very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. And Aaron says, this piece definitely gave off all the motion of old sailors and village fishermen returning to shore after a long day. Amen to that. I like that. Very cool. All right, and we have Composing Ourselves by Robert J. Tice. We're standing at the grand piano, figuring a song will sound. Who holds those keys would play themselves? We must take part, bring energies, send hidden hammers into strings. No one would know externally. So there's vibration resonance, the bloom of musicality. Why should we dwell in songlessness or let the silencers prevail? Why faults are inexperienced for harmonies we've not yet heard? We have good cause to learn, compose, dance past old measures, march on noise, converge in concert, chant as one, so our world turns more musical, less trapped in racket, interference, confusion, heinous dissonance. We have a chance, this perfect chance, such instruments we barely touch, and this could be our symphony, our chorus of community. End poem. What an absolutely stunning rite celebrating music. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Absolutely. You know, we have good, you know, the part I really like, we have good cause to learn, compose, dance past old measures, march on noise, conversion concerts, chant as one. And then at the ending line, and this could be our symphony, our course of community. And, you know, I love how he uses learning to, like I got it, you know, learning to use, learning to play an instrument or playing an instrument, like the piano here, I think, because he talks about the hammer striking the chords and all that. So I get that it's a piano. You know, he uses that as an extended metaphor for learning to how to come to play together and come together and be part of a community that is in tune, each with the other, you know. So just, you know, a brilliant, brilliant extended metaphor here for, you know, just, you know, and I love his title, Composing Ourselves, you know, how to act appropriately, play appropriately our piece of music, our own internal music, but, you know, in tune with everybody else so that we're all one big symphony in the end. So brilliant, brilliant write by Robert here.
I like that. I like that. And you're right. It is a wonderful extended metaphor. And I like how you mentioned the idea of how we all need to be in tune with each other. So very cool. And Dean, your thoughts?
Well, I really enjoyed this piece. I love the use of the musical references throughout, all the touches and nods, you know, from the very beginning. You know, we're standing at the grand piano figuring a song and a sound. Who holds those keys? Would play themselves? We must take part and bring energies, you know, and then we're talking about strings and vibrations and musicality. I think it was just really nicely pulled together. And as you said, you know, it's a great, great metaphor throughout, just very well done. And I liked what he had to say in this. So wonderful job, Robert, and thanks for sharing with us. I enjoyed this one very much.
Absolutely, absolutely wonderful comment. Yeah, I do really like that part about who holds those keys would play themselves. We must take part, bring energy. The idea that nothing happens unless we put action into it. You know, we want something between ourselves and other people or within a community or even in our own life. You know, we want that the music that is a representation of the joy of life to happen, then we have to be part of that. We can't just sit idly by. So I thought that was a really amazing part. And I also really like, why fault our inexperience for harmony we've not yet heard? We have good cause to learn, compose, dance, pass old measures, march on noise, converging concerts, chant as one. You know, I like how that's a representation of, you know, find new ways to think. Don't be afraid to learn. Don't be like, because I've never done this before, I shouldn't try. You know, if something's worth it, then give it a try. So wonderful, wonderful, right, and very well done. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put up one of our sound clouds, and this is Artistic Balance, Light versus Dark by Errant Panther. And Gene, whenever you're ready.
Here we go.
Artistic Balance, Light versus Dark by Errant Panther. This tide of lament flows like an untended river through a valley of thoughts weathered by the arc of time. Existence measured in the silence between breaths, full of admiration for the power of lunar hypnosis. Many miles still to cross in the shadows of redemption, as the moon so gracefully still commands center stage. Reason takes comfort in whatever light it can find, breaking the seal of truth within a dethreading mind. As the embers of a new day burn, grace now seeks its sanctuary, promising all that a life can give. No more dreams held captive in calico frames. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Aaron Panther. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Jean, your thoughts.
This was a beautiful piece, Aaron. I love your take on this image, the prompt. You feed into it well. The tide of lament flows like an untended river through a valley of thoughts weathered by the arc of time. Existence measured in the silence between breaths, full of admiration for the power of lunar hypnosis. Just, I think it was really beautifully captured. You have so many great lines, where is this? The tide of lament flows like an untended river. I like that reference there, how it you can look at the image and see it, and without the image you can still kind of see it. It's not dependent on the prompt, but I know when you look at the two of them together, they pair well together. But that wasn't the word I wanted. I think they enmesh with one another. I like the existence measured in the silence between breaths. I thought that was nice, very nice. It's just beautiful imagery throughout, and I think it definitely rivals the image itself with the beauty. I think the piece is lovely, but I think your words are equally or more so lovely in your descriptions and what have you. But I like this one too. Many miles still to cross in the shadows of redemption, as the moon so gracefully still commands center stage. I just think there's so much going on here that I really do like. I like something in every stanza. So I can say I like every stanza. I could copy and paste the whole thing. Yes, Naomi. I've gotten many miles out of that, but definitely it's true, because sometimes you just feel like you're leaving something out if you just pick something, and that makes it a little tough. I mean, reasonably I have to kind of control myself a little bit, but it's not easy. But definitely a great piece and well done, and really enjoyed it. It has this very solemn note to it, and I like that. Nicely penned.
Absolutely. And it's a good problem to have when you have poetry where every single line, it just runs so smoothly into the next, and you're having trouble separating them into your favorite part. It's definitely a good problem to have. And you are right, this poem could very well stand on its own, and yet you can see the connection, the inspiration from the artwork. So very good comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Ah, this is beautiful. There's such an easy, quiet peacefulness that comes off these words. The stanza, the existence measured in the silence between breaths, full of admiration for the power of lunar hypnosis. Just that ability to, or that need to grasp little pieces of life where we can throughout the many depths of life, throughout the darkness, just just lean out and grab those little parcels of light and bring them to you, you know, and bathe in them. You know, absolutely beautiful and brilliant take on the prompt. And, you know, that's what I got it from it, you know, just, you know, bringing in those little embers, you know, that and leaving them burn in your soul and giving you hope, giving you peace and giving you, you know, yeah, like a serenity inside. So that's what I got from it. And it made me, you know, yeah, just breathe a little lighter. Wonderful, wonderful, right?
Oh, I like that. I like that. Yeah, the idea of needing to bring the light into our life. I like how the title in this and the poem itself speaks to me on, you know, creating balance, not only in art, but within our life. But I also like how it speaks on the idea of how the water interacts with the moon and the human psyche interacts with the moon. And there's such a changing of perception, a changing of our reasoning when we are, you know, within the cycle of the moon, of a, you know, full moon. I really like reason takes comfort in whatever light it can find, breaking the seal of truth within a deep-threading mind. I love the phrase of deep-threading mind, the idea of a mind that wants to unravel the mysteries of life and nature. And as the embers of a new day burn, grace now seeks its sanctuary, promising all that a life can give. And the idea that we just have to reach out and take a hold of it. You know, as you were saying, Naomi, take in that light and let it burn within ourselves. Just absolutely brilliant imagery and metaphors, and very well done. All right. And up next we have Battle of the Tapes by S. Sharp. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Of course. Battle of the Capes. A ship, a fire in the bay, burns in reflections where she lay, the invincible British warship in mouth at Chesapeake Bay. Mast and spar burn night to day, unable to turn tail to get away. A captain and namesake sink to watery grave. Siege in Yorktown, this battle did sway. Cornwallis surrender, colony's flag displayed. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Naomi, and what a great brevity. I like what he does right on an actual battle, which I was just looking up, was Battle of the Chesapeake, also known as the Battle of the Virginia Capes, or simply the Battle of the Capes, was a crucial naval battle in the American Revolutionary War that took place near the mouth of Chesapeake Bay. And his attention to detail, his ability to practically allow us to be time travelers with him, to see this moment that was a changing moment in American history. And the loss of the individual life, but also what it meant for the war itself and for the future of American freedom. I thought this was really quite a captivating historical write. And I really liked the imagery of a captain and namesake sink to water waves, seas in Yorktown, this battle this way, Cornwallis surrender, colony flag displayed. And what a great ending line. You know, it really, with that simple action of line of colony flag displayed, it shows the victory within the moment. So wonderful writing, very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
This was a history lesson in a condensed version. That's what I can say.
Yeah.
But what great, I went to see what prompt two was, and it said, you may not save your changes if you do that. I went, whatever. But I'm sure, knowing Scott, that the image definitely suits this poem. But what a great piece. You know, here's the way of doing that, Scott does. He put true history pieces to poem, and he does it well. It's not too dry. It's not too much. It's not too much history, too little poem. It's not too much poem, too little history. He really has a great balance in that, and I appreciate that always in his work. But a ship of fire in the bay burns in reflections where she lay. The invincible British warship in mouth at Chesapeake Bay, mast and spar burn night and day. I don't know. I think that he really touched on something, and I'm going to check out the image as soon as I finish my comment. So great job, Scott, and thanks for sharing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I can't say for sure, but I would guess that there is one specific image in the contest where you can tell us of a ship that's like basically like been blown apart. And so I think it fits really well with that particular image. But wonderful comment there. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, me too. I looked it up, and, I copied that down, an amazing poem underlining a crucial naval battle in the American Revolutionary War that took place near the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay. And, what still really stood out to me, of course, this is I really admired this because, I didn't know this, being Canadian, we study a bit of American history, but not everything. So, and what we did, it was in my teenage years, so it's quite far away. So I really, really appreciated that, that Phil said, a little history lesson here. But, look at how this is composed. Like, mast and spar burn night to day, unable to turn tail to get away. Right there, those few little words, they spin such a story. Those few little lines there, it tells all the story. And, the word choice, in this brevity is just amazing. And it just captivates you all the way through. And, such a great job by Scott here. And such an amazing, brilliant write.
It really is. It really is. I have to agree. Wonderful comment, Naomi. All right. Up next, we have Overboard by Jessica C. Wheeler. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Overboard. All right. I'm going overboard. That's it. I'm jumping. Okay. Overboard by Jessica C. Wheeler. Do you like how I procrastinate? She is but a passing shadow flitting across the moonlit sea. Wandering waves roaming their ripples in search of her next ship to board. Steered by starlight, she journeys to new horizons. Constellations mapped many moons ago with no route to the harbor or home. Yet a paradox in this pattern of flight, a sudden urge to reach for the ties severed by her departure. With each anchored vessel and fleeting bond formed, her endless quest for more finds less and less as a gap she longs to bridge just grows. Soon her chances will sail into the night and out of view, leaving her final leap to land in the deep dark blue. Then without a ship to join or jump, no ties to save or sever, she'll be but a fading shadow sinking into the moonlit sea. End poem.
wonderful read there, Jean, and what an absolutely stunning write by Jessica. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, you know, this is awesome, you know, and I read, you know, just old me who said this was publishable, and, you know, I totally agree. You know, what an amazing modern day, you know, metaphor for, you know, how so much of our, so many people today just feel lost, and, you know, it's just a wonderful extended metaphor for, you know, the wandering soul who's found no comfort in any one place and just remains lost and wandering, you know, as the ship, you know, wanders and lost in the deep, dark blue there. You know, somebody who just can't find their focus or their land or their home or, you know, their place of being or their comfort. You know, like so many youth I see today, they can't find, their meaning in life, and they're just wandering. And so she just, wow, you know, she just took that prompt and she put a unique creative touch on it that's so Jessica, and she just flew with it. This is just amazing.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, she does have that unique and creative touch within her writing. And I like what you mentioned about the idea of the metaphor for people who are searching for the meaning of life, wandering around, you know, almost lost. So great comment there. And Jean, you did a beautiful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. This is a great piece by Jessica. I'm looking at the image and I'm thinking, wow, you know, and she took this someplace totally out of the picture. Kind of. Like there's small bits that you may find. But I think that she, you know, with each anchored vessel and fleeting bond formed, her endless quest for more finds less and less as the gap she longs to bridge just grows. You know, she definitely, this is like that other one. She's filled in a lot of the blanks. Any blank space that was in that prompt, although there are no blank spaces in the prompt, I want to make sure I say that, but any blank spaces, she filled in beautifully with her thoughts and her tale and her story in this poem. You know, soon her chances will sail into the night and out of view, leaving her final leap to land in the deep, dark blue. Then without a ship to join her jump, no ties to save or sever. She'll be but a fading shadow sinking into the moonlit sea. Definitely, I love her take on this, and I think it was just wonderfully done. So, Jessica, thanks for sharing, as always. It was a great piece, and definitely a well-done piece to the prompt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, she wrote one of the ship paintings, and there is open space in the sense that the main focus of the painting is the ship, And yet there's a large amount of ocean and sky that you see within the painting that represents that open space. And I do love the imagery and metaphor within this poem and how she almost personifies a ship, but also makes it a metaphor for a person who is, wandering around, who is searching for something. And I like how this speaks to me on the idea that we need to have something or someone, whether it's a belief, a faith, ourselves, whatever it is, we need something that we are anchored to. Otherwise, we just end up drifting and sinking. And so I really like this all the way through, but especially near the end, where it says, then without a ship to join or jump, no ties to save or sever. She'll be but a fading shadow sinking into the moonlit sea. Powerful lines and very well done. And let's see what we have next. The Glare, Refracting in the Glare by Captain Kerr. We burst through fog beneath a graying sky, on cusp of blue refracting in the glare. The mast had groaned like timbrels from on high, and crossbeams bend to ease the weight they bear. A fiery brand strikes our rising keel, burnt orange seas as sunset sears aflame. We stand abreast and knot our canvas sails to stay the wind and grip its mighty rein. Small ripples leap and quickly move astride. They grasp the depths of undertakings meet. Trade winds strong in fealty we are guide that rightly chart our progress towards the east. The day turns warm, dry fish and fruit suffice. Rainfall is sparse, discern waters low. Our stomachs growl with every meager slice and shrink in awe of starlight's massive glow. We'll find the shores of India's proud face, unfolding gold is yet to only dream. Then trade for spice, brown nutmeg, clove, and mace. The fog returns, the gulls no longer scream. End poem. What an absolutely epic and stunning rhyming poem that tells a story. I really like this one. And Jean, your thoughts?
I think this was a great piece, and I have to agree with you, Pam. It's a great rhyme, great meter. Wonderful. This one was more of a reflection of the prompt in my head, but there are other spaces that were filled, so I don't want to make it sound like, oh, no, she really did a great job meeting the prompt, I guess, head on, I could say. We burst through fog beneath a graying sky, on cusp of blue refracting in the glare. The masthead groans like timbrels from on high, and crossbeams bend to ease the weight they bear. You can look at that image and you can feel that. You can feel what she wrote. So it really was a great tie-in to the piece itself. And then down here it gets a little bit more distant. The days turn warm, or the day turns warm, dried fish and fruit suffice. Rainfall is sparse, cistern waters low. Our stomachs growl with every meager slice and shrink in awe of starlight's massive glow. I think that this is just, as you said, it's a wonderful piece all the way through. The imagery is great, that the thoughts are well expressed, and just beautiful imagery and such all the way through. So I hope I didn't twist that up too bad when I said it, but I knew what I had in my head. Anyway. Great job, and thanks for sharing, Captain Kerr.
Absolutely, I have to agree. Wonderful imagery. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this. It takes us back to that time, those voyages when they were in search of India, the time of Marco Polo and, all those ancient times when they were going on Christopher Columbus or whatever, whoever, those long ago voyagers on their sailboats, they'd take off in search of India, in search of the spices, the gold, the riches. And I really like the last stanza. We'll find the shores of India's proud face, unfolding gold as yet to only dream, then trade for spice, brown nutmeg, clove, and mace. the fog returns, the gulls no longer scream. So, you know, the fog returns, the gulls no longer scream. That means that they're far, far away from shore. You know, the gulls are no longer there. They're deep, deep, deep in the ocean. And, you know, there's no land in sight. And so a wonderful, wonderful peace.
It really is. And it does. It takes us back, like you said, Naomi. It has that feel of a classic poem or a classic seafaring adventure. You know, the part, it does make me think that the part about, like, we'll find the shores of India's proud face and holding gold is yet to only dream. It does make me think of the voyage of Christopher Columbus. And how they thought they were going to sail across the sea and reach India. You know, obviously that didn't quite go as planned. But the poem, oh my goodness, the rhyme, the flow, the imagery, the classic feel to it, as it does tell a seafaring tale. I really like where he says, the mast had grown like timbrels from on high, and crossing bends ease the weight they bear. You know, I like how he brings in, like, the idea of how much the ship has to go through, and how much that went into making those old ships that were carved and designed and made from wood. And then I like that the humanity that he brings into this with the days turn warm, dry fish and fruit suffice, rainfall is sparse, cistern waters low, our summits growl with every meager slice, and shrink in awe of starlight's massive glow. Like, he really brings us into the moment of what these men are going through as they sail across the ocean. So, amazing writing and very well done. And I am going to put up another one of our SoundClouds, and this is Arthur's Theme by Eric Benson. So whenever you're ready, Jean.
Okay, and listen, we have a caller, so let me grab the caller first. Hello,
okay.
780, who's calling, please?
Yes, that would be me, Diane D.
Hello, Diane.
Hey, Diane. Glad
hey,
you're
Diane.
Going
hello.
Hello, indeed. And gentlemen, I don't know if there's gentlemen on, but hello,
yep.
Ladies.
Nope, no
hello.
Gentlemen. It's a ladies' night tonight so far.
And no twisted mistress.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to put up this piece by Eric Svensson called Arthur's Theme. And here we go.
Forbidden.
What?
Forbidden.
Ah.
Okay, well, I guess that's...
I guess we'll try another one. And then I'll let me try and do this again, see what happens.
Okay.
So, thanks, Pam.
Yep.
That didn't sound
all
like
her. All right. So... I'll go ahead and let's see, what poem am I going to grab? We'll have to grab something to put Diane to work, of course, because we can't waste that voice. here we go. I'm going to put up Having a Tantrum by Julie Buck. And go ahead, Diane, and give that a read for us, please.
I would love to. Having a Tantrum by Julie Buck. The Pacific Ocean is having a tantrum as it repeatedly chest thumps the defending rocky shoreline. The grayish blue clouds are angry, and watch me, the full rose moon tirelessly shines behind clouds, ready to release fast-falling fat rain blowing sideways from the wind. I know my place. I know who I am. I take this storm and let it rip on past. I'm safe where I be. Maybe smoother waters tomorrow. They say let's don't borrow trouble, but why buy it? And I promise you, storms are developing right now, coming to a place soon near you. Some are live in progress. And your only guarantee is there's nothing that you can do. Personally, I like a soft blanket and Fritos corn chips with bean dip to help me get through. And I eat a lot of bean dip. End poem.
Great read there. Oh, that was a very relatable ending. I, too, like Fritos and bean dip and a warm blanket. You know, but absolutely a great read and a wonderful write by Julie Buck. And Naomi, your thoughts?
That's what I love about Julie is that, you know, she takes this prompt and she attacks it and uniquely twists it into a poem that is so, so Julie. She does that every time. Oh, my gracious, it's just so amazing. And, you know, the tantrum, of course, you know, the way of dealing with life's ups and downs or, you know, the what life throws at you, you know, the way you deal with them. And you're just saying, well, hey, come on, there's nothing you can do. So, yeah, just curl up in a blanket and take it cool and eat those chips. And, you know, just bask in the moment. And then, you know, so just amazing. Just so Julie. And I just loved it.
It really is. Like you said, it's just so Julie. So wonderful comment there. And Diane, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, I loved it. I especially loved the ending. It went out on such a chuckle. It was a really clever piece. And having a tantrum. I mean, I think the best tantrums are by toddlers and then old people. I love it, like, and I have them, and I consider myself an old people, and I have these tantrums, and she writes it beautifully, chest thumps. I get mad because I'm aging, and I get pissed off about it, and I want to thump my chest. I love the way she captured this tantrum and put it into words, and the metaphor of the ocean, you know, having a tantrum. Well, who's having the tantrum, Julie? There you go. I loved it. What an awesome write.
It really was. And, yeah, using the ocean as a metaphor is great because, I mean, the ocean, and I compare my closest comparison. I mean, I have been to the Pacific Ocean, but I've been more often to Lake Superior. And Lake Superior is the same way. It can be, you know, so calm and so beautiful. And then it can, you know, go into this temper tantrum, this rage, you know, and I like how she paints that picture with the grayish blue clouds are angry and watch me, the full rose moon tirelessly shines behind clouds, ready to release fast falling fat rain blowing sideways from the wind. And I like that she brings in the wind because really it is the wind that manipulates, controls, you know, what the water is doing, how smoothly it flows, or is it lifting these high waves and raging about. And when the storms of life come in, you know, I like that this could be that metaphor for the storms of life. You know, there are different ways that people handle that. And sometimes all we want to do is we want to have our comfort food or our hot cup of tea or whatever it is, our warm blanket, maybe a favorite TV program, whatever it is that helps us to feel a little more balanced. And there was that nice touch of humor within the ending. So very well done. And Jean, are you back with us or still checking things out? All right. Well, I will go ahead and grab the next poem, and let's see what we have here. Did I grab the next poem? I think I did. I feel like the little engine that can't quite figure it out. I think I can. All right, so let me go back here. All right, I think it is, I will say it, that is a good question. Whose turn is it to read? Let's see, before that, there was, oh yeah, I read last. So Naomi, I put up Emerald Dreams by Blue Right 76. And would you go ahead and give that a read for us, please? Is anybody with us? Did Naomi jump off? Oh dear, she must have, well, I guess I'll be reading this one, but let me just make sure I don't need to bring her back on. Let's see. All right, well, for some reason, do you hear me, Diane?
I do, Pam.
Well, that is good. Then I will go ahead, now that I know that you can hear me, I will go ahead and read this poem and hopefully...
Did you miss me?
Oh, yes. Well, that and the fact that Naomi was not responding either, so I thought you both kind of jumped ship.
Oh, no. I was in the green room with a caller. But no, we don't have anyone with us tonight because it was off topic,
okay.
And it was someone I didn't know, so I referred them to Friday. Anyway, Naomi, are you here? Okay, I'll tell you what. I have to step away for a minute. I do have
sure,
Eric
no ready
when you're ready, and I'm going to be quiet and wander off so you can read that poem.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So we have up Emerald Dreams by Blue Right 76. Hands copper bracelet wound, held tight and led soft ones, red sands and tall trees, Nalumbo, Nusifera lakes beside their gods abode, eye on the flag, the adieu, fairest sands clung unto flowering feet on gravel, ferric skies broke yellow, fell carpet aglow their path, she alone turned once to the waves of goodbye, in iron dawn he walked on, waters far stood await, to be tasted by these parched duty and life in colors. Horizon broke, sleepy clouds in slow curtains unfold. For the king their allegiance, miles gave way to duty. Lotus river that fed the lakes now danced under thirsty toes. At his firm and soft words she moved closer, his stride four to her one. Labor devout, a choice palm grooves eyes, pleased, later palate too sweet, seeking pear on vermilion roads, with white salt fields beside, wet shoulders touched, crystal mounts hidden from masked riders dark, gripped her slender fingers firm as he watched for the Gauls, these lands under enemy now. Like spies crouched at turns, goddess temples at village borders embraced their tired spirits, waited for word from their men, came he the smiling friend, the fairy arrives at dawn, one blue eye and the other black, temple priest blessed them three, coconut palm leaves that fell by the silent scary outskirts, woven into baskets shone, only the graveyard processions disrupt the quiet dusk winds. The friends now strategy spoke, numbers tallied of ships and carts, horses and men for king's guard, holy night, pitch dark blue, spine tall, awake they pray, a pair of clothes and roasted rice, millet feed and palm sugar having shared with the temple's hoard. Bao then left before the sun. The tributary led the way to its home, walking across the dimming street lamps. Hooded figures, three pursued east at dawn's light, found the baobab tree, the tallest one with a few smaller siblings, survivors strong on foreign lands, giant home-sized angel he gave solace, branches shelter like mother's hands. Marching men found not friends, salty air on dry lips and loud galls, awoke his sleeping smiles, her deep sword in fervent love. Slowly they ran toward shore, tide quiet and pliant welcome. Fisherman's ferry loaded then led, friends part done, he did part, sailed the emerald sea when white masts and vast fleet touched their seeking eyes into the waves they fled. White flag signal peace, he hopped car into the biggest ships, sighed to pull in his eager mate, turned to find enemy mast gaining, panicked fisherman boat turned, gushed into the southern waters, hands bereft now gripping iron. Stood she alone on swirling waters as the waves pulled them apart, splash. His closed eyes opened, his woman in the waves. She held on as he joined her, then swiftly swam them aboard. Under the swift masts on emerald waters, man, he embraced her tight. King's merchant navy to foreign lands took their dreams into adventures. End poem. Oh, my goodness, what an absolutely epic tale of adventure and romance. And Diane, your thoughts?
Absolutely. Adventure and romance and mystery and energy. There was so much energy in here. And Pam, you read that with the energy that Blue Wright wrote into that. And the imagery, captivated by the energy, red sands and tall trees, Nalumbo, Nusfira Lakes, I'm sorry, that Nusfira Lakes beside their god's abode. And then down a little further, one of the lines that really, coconut palm leaves violent, scary outskirts woven into baskets shown, only the graveyard processions. Just so much imagery, and like you said, it's got that romance and that travel. You're going through one place from another place to another place and just traveling through and not stopping. I was so captivated by the read and the write of this. I just couldn't take myself away from it. Excellent write and very, very, very enjoyable for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And I see that Naomi had to drop for some reason. I don't know if technical problems, but that's okay. It was good to have her while she was here, and maybe she'll get back to us. But if not, her time is always greatly appreciated. But, yeah, this is wonderful storytelling. It is epic. It is, you know, it's got romance, and it's got the kind of romance that, you know, it's all about that deep connection of two people who would go on adventures together, who would travel and trust each other. And I really like how it speaks on the idea of love being a form of salvation. And amazing imagery and metaphors throughout. I like how she mentions the baobab tree. You know, which is one of those really large trees that you see in, like, Africa. And I don't know where else they grow. Is it Africa or is it Australia? Now I'm all of a sudden feeling stupid because I spoke before I thought. But I can picture them in my head really clearly because they're very thick and, you know, very, like, just really I don't know, there's something almost commanding about their presence. And a lot of animals and people really depend on them. And so I really like how she describes the baobab tree as a giant home-sized angel. He gave solace, branches, shelter, like mother's hand. Wonderful lines and very well done. All right. And
I have returned.
Oh, welcome back.
Thank you. Did you miss that? I wandered and then Naomi left. See how it goes around here? I tell you, I blinked.
It does. Yeah.
All right. Hello, Diane, in case I didn't say it when you got here. I think I did, though.
Well, hello.
Yes. I fixed Eric's cancer.
Wonderful.
Not good for much else. But I, if you want to do that, I can do that now.
Yes, I'll go ahead and I'll put Eric's link up and we can go ahead and play that sound file.
Awesome sauce. La, 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 la. Okay. I see it, so I'm going to play it. Here we go.
Arthur's theme. Oh, beloved Bell Bull. La Luna Grande, enamored by your spacious aria's aura, soft seminal sonatas saturate my terse heart rates. Moonstruck, I swoon with sheer beneath your portentous pizza pie eye. With Arthur gaiety, top hat and long tails, inebriates whimsical wishes. Smitten by your erudite influence and drained by risque New York, black Liza Minnelli bowler hat dances me out of dizzy Gillespie thespian life. Washed up impresario fled to Martha's vineyard to clear his head. Pendulum thoughts, palette knife carved stacked staircases across armadillo plated seascape. Royal blue ocean swami and sky concubine conspire with seductive siren songs. In the hazy, mazy distance, mute cliff effigies rise like somnambulant Neanderthals. Non-sequitur grunts escape my pursed lips begging for mea culpa, bull. Trendsetter heart defrost with each stacked staircase climb. But La Luna Grande dances towards sublime heavens so unbreachable far. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Eric. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. I love the imagery in this, and what a great title. And today is actually Liza Minnelli's birthday, so very cool to fit her in there. Wonderful wordplay, imagery, and metaphors. Such a great celebration and honoring of the moon and music and the light and joy that is brought into our lives. I really like in the hazy, mazy distance, mute cliffs, effigies rise like some avant, Neanderthals, non-sequitur grunts escape my pursed lips begging for mea culpas. You know, sometimes the beauty of the water, the beauty of the moonlight And in life in general, just leaves us feeling absolutely speechless. So amazing right and very well done. Though I will say that I definitely think Eric is never with a lack for words. I mean, the way he just juggles them so perfectly and balances them, he definitely has a gift for the thespian life. So very cool. And Diane, your thoughts?
I just, like, as always with Eric's work, I mean, he captures with a Shakespearean tone to it. He captures something like the moon in that beautiful prompt and grabs the moon and depicts it in like so many ways, different ways, and pulls out so much passion and everything from throughout it, like with the words that he used. Moonstruck, I swoon with share beneath your portentous pizza pie eye. And the line right before that really got me. I love the alliteration in it. Soft, seminal, sonata, saturate my terse heart rate. Like, wow, how that rolls off the tongue. He just, you know, captures a prompt like that and puts such delicious words into it. Just an amazing write. Really, really well done. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean?
Of course I am. And I think we have Naomi back. So let me see if this is her. Hello,
yeah.
Naomi. Is that you?
Yeah. Sorry, girl.
Well, it's okay. Just glad you're here. If you're not, well, we would have dealt with it, you know. So happy having you back. Did you happen to hear Eric's piece, or should I go ahead?
Go ahead. At all. Yeah, go ahead.
I thought it was a nice piece by Eric. It had great imagery. I love the references of such great talent throughout the piece. I think it was the second stanza. No, first stanza. Yes, he did it in the first stanza. He has two. And I think that it was a nice reflection of the prompt itself. And I have to say, because the second stanza, pendulum thoughts, palette knife, carved stacked staircases across armadillo planet seascape. When you look at that image, you can see exactly what he's getting at. It's the way that the waves are painted on here. They look like a stair step. And I thought the use of the armadillo was a clever thought as well. Royal blue oceans, swami and sky concubine conspire with seductive siren songs. It's just a really good piece all the way through. So Eric, wonderful job and great audio. And thanks for sharing. As always, I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. And I like that you point out the how creative it was and clever with the armadillo scales, because that's mm-hmm. kind of like what the painting does look like, because there's such a layeredness to it.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. And we're going to go ahead and move on to the next rite, which is your rite, Diane. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
I certainly will. Shakespeare's Casket. Each paints a landscape on Saul's palette, where the color of time is rusty, and spiders spin a web of decay into spongy and mottled varnish-like crust. Alone, old-fangled, and secretless, standing there more out of habit, tattered, knotted, and crooked, a landmark for those getting lost. Looking like an unshaven lumberjack, wisps of whiskers dangling thirsty, leaning towards its water coffin. Pinocchio outliving his Geppetto. On the backbones of bricklayers, woodcarvers whittled and chiseled, plank by plank by plank, laying the gatekeeper's weather wrap. Winter has crawled inside him now like a chemo-resistant cancer, gnawing at his insides, grinding guts, measuring him for his casket. All struggles of life have a plot, and that shack of sprigs is a storyteller, a baldy, scaly William Shakespeare whispering a eulogy to the mortician. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Diane. I'm so glad you were inspired. And this was definitely a bit different of a picture than I had up for the other prompts, as it featured a building, you know, that was sitting by itself with no people around it, and there wasn't a shift. And you definitely caught a lot of the imagery. And, of course, I'm going to comment further, but first I'll get other thoughts. So, Naomi, your thoughts.
Oh, my gracious, Diane, the metaphors in this, well, the imagery, you know, is to die for, but the metaphors, like, I kept going, you know, like a Pinocchio outliving its Geppetto. Oh, my gracious, isn't that amazing? And, you know, to compare it to an unshaving lumberjack, that is just awesome. And, you know, all the way through, you know, but, you know, what really, the chemo-resistant cancer that has crawled inside, and, you know, but what really got me was the last stanza, you know, all struggles of life have a plot, and that shack of sprigs is a storyteller, a balding scally, William Shakespeare whispering a eulogy to the mortician. That is just amazing. I'm telling you, Pam, this contest, I don't know how you're going to judge it, but good luck to you.
Yeah,
but,
that's easy, that's for sure.
Oh, my gracious. But this is a fabulous write, Diane. Wow, a gem, really a gem. If this doesn't get a front page pick, I don't know what will, but this is just amazing.
Aw, thank you.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Naomi. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, Diane, this is, sorry, so well written. I loved your imagery throughout, and again, your metaphors, as Naomi mentioned. I thought it was just really well done and a great job all the way through. I, for the lack of not knowing which one of these stanzas I wanted to grab, because they were all good, I started with the very first, second, and third one, because I thought they were kind of lively, you know. They were just written so nicely. Age paints a landscape on fall's palette, where the color of time is rusty and spiders spin a web of decay into spongy and mottled varnish-like crust. What a great way to begin this poem, because, you know, when you look at the image, it's relatable. But, you know, without the image, it's just great. You know, it doesn't need it to carry on. It's a wonderful reflection of the image, but the image isn't necessary to make the poem work. So nice job, and really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you, Jean.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Yeah, I really like how you captured the colors within the painting with your first line. But more important, you to me anyways, is you've captured the personality of the building. You know, this old mill made of wood and stone, it speaks so much on history and the passing of time. And I love the description of looking like an unshaven lumberjack, wisps of whiskers dangling thirsty, leaning toward its water coffin, Pinocchio outliving its Geppetto. The idea of the good building that lasts long past the men and women who work in and around it. The passing of time, the history that whispers to us from inside the walls. I also really like All Struggles of Life Have a Plot, and that Shack of Spriggs is a storyteller. That is so true. That is so true. So wonderful life and very well done.
Thank you guys so much. Well, well, yeah. Calm your food.
Absolutely.
And
I'm really glad I phoned in.
What was that?
Sorry?
I didn't hear you, Diane. I'm not sure what you said. Sorry.
Oh, I couldn't hear you guys either.
A glitch. A ghost in
yep.
the machine.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and fit in one more short poem. It'll be our last one for the night, and then I'll have like five carryovers. So if your poem wasn't heard, it will be heard on another show, and when I know which show, I'll let you all know. And this is a Piano on Thin Ice by Afasiana. And would you give that a read for us, please?
I know this is awful long, Pam. I'm going to charge extra for them this size. The lyrics of my life weigh heavy, cracking the calm, threatening to crush the melody. Stability melted in the heat of the moment. Cobwebs of compassion mirror the broken foundation. The keys to connection press on, but the fall is inevitable. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Dean. And while you get a drink of water for that long read, we'll go ahead and comment. No, I thought this was such a amazing brevity and a brilliant take on the prompt, because if you look at the picture, it does look like somebody playing the piano on the ice. And I like how it keeps an extended metaphor to that idea of feeling like you're going to fall apart. And it's difficult to separate one line from the next, but I have to say what really stood out to me was stability melted in the heat of the moment, cobwebs of compassion. Cobwebs of compassion is like you have this connection, and yet it feels so frail, like it could just fall apart any moment. Amazing lines and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Uh-oh.
Are you?
She's going
again. Are you, Naomi?
She dropped.
Going again. Okay. All right. Well, and Diane, your thoughts?
Well, first I must say, amazing artwork that you guys picked for this contest. I mean, that artwork, how could you not be inspired by some of this art? And if Adriana took this, and she grabbed the heaviness. What caught me was the heaviness, the piano resembling the heaviness of life and the things that go on in life. You know, where the calmness is disrupted, and you know how life throws things at us and threatens to crush the melody of what's going on, the balance of our life and everything. And she just grabbed that and mirrored the broken foundation. But my favorite line was, because, yes, we fall so many times in life, and she said it here, the fall is inevitable. Ice or not, we fall, and she captured that heaviness that leads to a fall and things that can happen in life. Brilliantly done. I really enjoyed this write.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
That this was just a fabulous piece. The lyrics of my life, way heavy, cracking the calm, threatening to crush the melody. That in itself is just a great thought there. But then stability melted in the heat of the moment, cobwebs of compassion. When you look at this, not only does it look like ice, thin ice, but when you look at the way that ice is cracking, it does look like a cobweb to me. Afasiana did a fabulous job with this. Wonderful brevity, complete and definitely an excellent job. So, great job.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Wonderful comment. And such a great show tonight. Thank you, as always, Naomi and Jean, for being my twisted sisters. Thank you to Q and Aaron and Robbie for hanging on the board. Thank you, Diane, for calling in. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And make sure to keep an eye out on the contest and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Thanks, Diane, for calling in.
Good night. You bet. Good night, guys.